Today, no escape. Recession will destroy wealth, period. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Well, I'm recording this in the middle of a rainstorm on Saturday morning, and it's very cold and very wet. And frankly, it seems totally appropriate because in today's show, we review the week's market action, starting in the US, by far the most influential market, followed up by Europe, Asia, and Australia. And there is really no place to hide. Wealth is being destroyed, and there's no end in sight. Data is flagging recession as central banks continue to raise rates. And given the astronomical debt burden out there, this is a big deal. Even conservative investment strategies are being hit. This is a train wreck, said Alex Dunn, executive director of research house Rainmaker Group. When a traditionally conservative strategy is getting the worst returns, then all bets are off. It doesn't matter where you go, almost everyone will be in pain. In fact, the S&P 500 notched up its worst start since 1970, plunging 20.6% between January and June. And the Dow had its largest first half drop since 1962, and the Nasdaq Composite had its largest percentage decline ever. And US stocks slipped over the last 5 days, with the S&P 500 erasing part of its rally in the previous week. It was down more than 2%. The index just endured its 11th drop in 13 weeks. And all three indices posted losses for the week. Despite this, Wall Street actually rallied to close slightly higher on Friday in light trading, with investors heading into the long weekend and embarking on the second half of the year looking for the next market-moving catalysts. Actually, all major groups in the S&P 500 rose, while the tech-heavy Nasdaq 100 underperformed. Treasuries surged after an ugly first half, as weak economic data added to recession fears. The US economic data was frankly horrid this week. An influx of data showed softer consumer spending, sagging sentiment, and subdued manufacturing, all suggesting a US economy with a more fragile foundation, and that prompted several forecasters to lower their estimates for growth. Notably, inflation-adjusted personal spending declined in May for the first time this year, and gains in each of the prior 4 months were revised down, indicating that demand earlier in the year was weaker than previously thought. Home sales and manufacturing surveys are also showing signs of trouble across the US. The weakness in consumer spending, which is by far the biggest contributor to US gross domestic product, compounded the souring outlook that already had some optimists turning cautious earlier in the week. Morgan Stanley economists now expect GDP growth to be at 0.3% annualized in the second quarter. That's down sharply from 2% just days ago. Data out on Wednesday showed the economy shrank 1.6% in the first 3 months of the year. That was lower than previously reported due to a sharp downturn revision to consumer spending. Stephen Stanley at Amherst PerPoint Securities slashed his second quarter growth estimate on Thursday almost a full percentage point to 2.2%, saying in the note that the consumer spending picture has darkened dramatically. While slower demand may be good news for the Federal Reserve, which has been aggressively raising interest rates in an effort to curb decades-high inflation, concerns about a recession continue to grow. Inflation-adjusted spending declined a larger-than-expected 0.4% in May. That was led by a drop in outlays on goods. Spending on services, though, proved resilient, suggesting that consumers are rotating away from purchasing items like furniture and cars and towards things like international travel as pandemic-related health concerns fade. Still, the overall slowdown in household spending feeds into a narrative that the economy is stumbling towards a recession. We still think services spending will carry consumer spending through the summer, but once Labor Day comes, the boost from services may not be enough to keep overall spending in the black, said Wells Fargo & Co. economists in the note. What's more, consumer confidence continues to backslide. The University of Michigan's measure of sentiments slid more than 8 points in June to a record low of 50, and data this week from the Conference Board showed a similar build in pessimism, reflecting the dimmest expectations in almost a decade. Nearly 30% of Conference Board survey respondents said they expect business conditions to worsen in the next 6 months. That's the biggest share since March 2009, and that was during the height of the financial crisis. Analysis by JP Morgan showed that 35% of households are having trouble paying bills. That's up 10 percentage points from the same time last year. And consumers are borrowing more and running down cash balances to cover higher expenses. And regional Fed manufacturing surveys have also taken a grimmer tone, with 4 of 5 indicating business activity shrank this month. A number of Texas manufacturers acknowledged the pain of higher prices for raw materials and still unreliable supply chains, according to the Dallas Fed survey. And in the Kansas City Fed district, which managed to show a moderate yet slowing growth in manufacturing activity, one undisclosed respondent noted that their customers overorders and have excess supply in the near term, while another mentioned that input inventories were at an all-time high. So combined, the surveys highlight growing unease about elevated inflation and the outlook for demand as Fed Chair Jerome Powell and his colleagues step harder on the monetary policy brakes. With order books becoming thinner against a backdrop of elevated retail inventories, there's a risk that production will slow. And this week, revised gross domestic product data showed inflation-adjusted business inventories grew at an annualized rate of nearly $189 billion in the first quarter. That followed a record $193.5 billion increase at the end of 2021 and marked the biggest back-to-back quarterly build in data back to 1999. Government data this week on durable goods orders showed business investment in equipment remained firm in May, even in the face of rising interest rates and concerns about the economy, and a measure of core capital goods orders advanced a solid 0.5%, while shipments impressed with a second straight 0.8% gain. While the figures indicate equipment investment will contribute to economic growth in the second quarter, the latest federal surveys indicate weaker expectations for capital spending in coming months. Regional surveys show that manufacturers see business spending throttling back. And sales of previously owned homes, which makes up the majority of the US market, slid for a fourth straight month in May. But housing metrics out this week painted a different picture, one of stabilization. Both new and pending home sales halted slides, and a gauge of home price growth in 20 US cities actually plateaued. But even so, extremely elevated home prices, paired with the highest borrowing costs in more than a decade, may limit substantial further improvement in the market. Mortgage applications were little changed last week after 2 weekly declines. As a result, the US GDP modelling is, well, recessionary. Fed GDP Now model estimate for real GDP growth, seasonally adjusted, in the second quarter of 2022 is minus, yes, I said minus 2.1% on July the 1st, and down from minus 1% on June the 30th. While the Atlanta Fed GDP Now is not an official forecast, it's a running estimate of real US GDP growth based on available economic data for the current measured quarter. The estimate is based solely on the mathematical results of the model. Anyway, bond yields sank, with the 5-year rate at one stage plunging more than a quarter of a percentage point, and traders are paying the most since March to hedge against a deeper slide in 10-year US yields. The 10-year was at 2.899, the 3-year was at 2.8635, and the 2-year was at 2.839. The risks of a renewed sell-off in equities is still high as investors are pricing in a mild recession, according to Goldman Sachs. Corporate earnings will likely come under pressure as margins face the test of inflation and weakening consumer sentiment, they added. And a gauge of US manufacturing fell to a 2-year low. That's what many investors are now worried about. The growth outlook, said Leah Gwaski, Chief Investment Officer at BYN Mellon Wealth Management. That's the right thing to worry about. we still have to be worried about inflation, but I'm more worried about economic growth slowing. Another S&P 500 bounce is being squashed actually as quickly as it surfaced. The optimistic spirits that kept driving bulls back to equities, however, are still hanging around. While punishment for optimism has been swift in 2022, a decade of bull market conditioning is proving nearly impossible to vanquish. Retail investors mostly refuse to part with meme shares. Bullish handicappers sit with predictions that many stocks will double, and valuations are high enough to imply an opinion that next year's hit to earnings will be trivial. Well, all of this explains why the 2022 bear market has lingered rather than climaxed into a sudden crash, as it did in 2020. To contrarians who say a floor won't form until every buyer is exhausted, the tidings suggest the repricing in stocks has further to go. It's human nature to want to buy the dip, to want to find the bottom. And I do think that behaviour is still quite evident among investors, said Steve Sosnick, chief strategist at Interactive Brokers. It means what we've seen is what we're likely to keep seeing: markets that are grinding their way lower, punctuated by periodic bouts of enthusiasm. Despite a massive valuation correction, actually, stocks are still far from being obvious bargains. At the low in June, the S&P 500 was trading at 18 times earnings multiple. That's a multiple that exceeds trough valuations seen in all previous 11 bear cycles from the 1950s. Put another way, should stocks bounce from here, this bear market bottom will have been the most expensive on record. At its current level, the S&P 500's price-earnings ratio is 19, and that's higher than it's been over the long-term average, both in and out of bear markets. Calling a bottom here requires a firm belief that stocks either deserve a higher premium than usual, or that earnings will keep growing into the stretch valuations. That's a debatable scenario now that the Federal Reserve is engaged in the most aggressive monetary tightening in decades, a stance that creates pressure for both equity valuations and the economy. We're headed into the holiday weekend and having a late day relief rally, said Joseph Srocker, chief investment officer at Nova Point in Atlanta. But we'll likely have to wait until investors return from the holiday weekend to see if it's sustainable at the start of the new quarter. Market participants are now looking to the second quarter earnings season, the Labour Department's June employment report, and the Federal Reserve's monetary policy meeting expected later in July. Now, the microchip sector dropped sharply after Micron Technology warned of cooling demand, and its shares pulled the broader semiconductor sector lower. And worries over waning demand in the face of decade-high inflation were reflected in the Institute for Supply Management's Purchasing Managers Index, which showed a deacceleration in both new orders and input prices. ISM's report seems to back the view that the economy is cooling and inflation appears to have passed its peak. And this raised the possibility that the Fed might have wiggle room for a dovish pivot after its second straight 75 basis point interest rate hike expected in July. The Fed is going to need to see a lot more evidence to change its mind about further continued interest rate hikes, though, said Tim Griske, senior portfolio strategist at Ingalls and Snyder in New York. There's still a lot of uncertainty about the economy and inflation, despite early signs that inflation may have peaked. The Dow Jones Industrial Average gained 1.05% to 31,097. The Nasdaq was up 0.9% to 11,127. And the S&P 500 gained 1.06% to 3,825. Consumer stocks jumped 2%, helping the broader market claw its way back out of negative territory intraday after home builders surged as investors priced in a less aggressive Fed rate hike in July. Tech, though, underperformed other sectors as weaker than expected guidance from Micron soured sentiment. Micron Technology fell 3% after the chipmaker guided fiscal fourth quarter sales below Wall Street estimates on signs of softening demand. Micron's sharply reduced guidance for the quarter four that assumes both bit and ASP, average selling price declines in DRAM and NAND, due to deteriorating end markets in what is typically a seasonally stronger period, Wedbush said as it cut its price target on the chipmaker stock to $85 from $120. It closed at $53.65. Advanced Micro Devices, NVIDIA, Texas Instruments Incorporated fell more than 3%. Big tech ended well off season lows, though, after a more than 1% gain in Apple and Microsoft helped to offset weakness in Alphabet and Meta Platforms. Meta Platforms fell after the Facebook parent CEO Mark Zuckerberg's warnings that we need to brace for a deep economic downturn. Boeing shrugged off earlier losses to end the day 2% higher, even as rival Airbus secured orders for 300 jets from China's three biggest state-owned airlines at a time when Boeing 737 MAX jets are still to resume commercial flights in the country. And in other news, General Motors rose more than 1% after reporting a fall in quarterly sales and warning of delays to deliveries as supply chain issues continue to weigh. The automaker, however, kept its guidance for the year unchanged. Analysts now expect aggregate second quarter S&P 500 earnings growth of 5.6%. That's down from 6.8% projected at the beginning of the quarter, according to recent data. And oil prices headed for its third consecutive weekly fall, its worst run this year, on concerns about the strength of the US economy, the largest consumer of crude in the world, and as a group of top producers increased supply. OPEC and allies decided to stick with its previously announced plan to increase output each month by 648,000 barrels per day in July and August, but avoided discussing policy from September onwards. US crude futures traded up to $108.38 a barrel, while the Brent contract was at $111.39. Additionally, gold futures rose just 0.31% to $1,808, while silver was down 2.6% to $19.82, and the euro-US dollar traded 0.51% lower at 1.0429. Over in the eurozone, annual inflation in the eurozone rose to a fresh record high in June, climbing to 8.6%, according to preliminary estimates from the EU Statistics Office on Friday. The increase, which is also up from the 8.1% May reading of the current bloc's key consumer price index, and it's higher than analyst estimates of 8.4%, was driven in particular by a spike in prices in energy and food. Stripping away costs for those items, EU harmonised inflation increased to 4.6% in June from 4.4% in the previous month. And on a monthly basis, Eurozone CPI in June held steady at 0.8%. And meanwhile, price growth in Italy also spiked to a record high in June, coming at 8.5% compared to 7.3% in May, according to separate data. And France and Spain also reported new highs earlier this week, and the outlier there was Germany, where prices unexpectedly dropped on a month-by-month basis. The latest inflation data comes as the European Central Bank looks set to raise interest rates this month for the first time in 11 years in a bid to curb soaring prices. The ECB has signalled that it will also hike borrowing costs in September, but said the size of the move will depend on incoming data. European Central Bank President Christine Lagarde warned in a speech at the central bank's annual forum earlier this week that the central bank will go, quote, as far as necessary to bring inflation back down to its 2% target. There was some good news with Eurozone manufacturing PMI coming in at 52.1 in June, down from 54.6 in May, but still falling less than was expected. The German equivalent figure came in at 52, in line with expectations, with the region's manufacturing powerhouse still in expansion territory. However, concerns remain that aggressive policy actions by the central bank may trigger a broader slowdown. The ECB is also moving to address worries over a potential blowout in the gap between sovereign debt yields in peripheral nations like Italy and Spain, and larger economies, particularly Germany. A nasty combination of circumstances has been hammering stocks. Of course, Russia's war in Ukraine has driven inflation higher, exacerbating concerns about how aggressive central banks like the Federal Reserve will need to be to rein it in. That boosted fears of a recession this year or next. And coronavirus lockdowns in China, the world's second largest economy, have also fed anxiety. The DAX in Germany traded 0.23% higher to 12,813. The CAC 40 in France lifted 0.14% to 5,931. And the UK's FTSE dropped 0.01% to 7,168. The pan-European stock Stoxx 600 fell 0.1% on Friday, continuing a slump after recording a drop of 9% in the second quarter. That's the worst three-week period since 2020. In Asia, China offered a ray of light as its manufacturing activity expanded for the fastest in 13 months in June, boosted by the lifting of COVID lockdowns. And China took fresh steps on Friday to facilitate foron investment in its $20 trillion bond market, saying it would cut service fees, improve overseas access to foreign exchange hedging, and streamline the process of opening accounts. And China will also facilitate cross-border bond subscriptions and make it easier for foreign passive funds to trade Chinese bonds. The China Foreign Exchange Trade System, the CFETS, affiliated China Central Bank, said in a statement. Overseas investors reduced holdings of Chinese bonds for a fourth consecutive month in May, as diverging monetary policies kept Chinese yields pinned below their US counterparts. Now, this move is aimed at promoting further opening of China's bond markets and deepening capital market reforms, said the CFETS, which operates the platform for China's interbank and foreign trading. To reduce foreign investors' trading costs, service fees under the Bond Connect scheme, a major cross-border channel for bond investors, will be slashed by 25% starting on July the 11th, according to the CFETS. And on Monday, the CFETS will roll out a service for cross-border bond subscriptions, making it easier for overseas investors to participate in the primary market of Chinese bonds. And in addition, CFETS will make it easier for foreign investors to conduct forex hedging business in China and will further extend trading hours on the onshore forex market. And China will also improve a mechanism for trading based on closing prices to better meet the needs of foreign passive bond investors. Global index publishers, including the FTSE Russell and JP Morgan, have added Chinese bonds to their indices, channeling passive money inflows into China. The markets were down across Asia, though, with the Japan Nikkei down 1.73% to 25,935, the Korean Kospi down 1.17% to 2,305, the Hong Kong Hang Seng down 0.6% to 21,859, and the Shanghai Index down 0.32% to 3,387. Now, down here in Australia, the S&P 500 ASX 200 index of Australian stocks ended the year down 10.2%, despite a recent pickup in performance. The Australian government bond index was 11% down, and house prices are tipped to dip between 15 and 20%. Property is sliding, as I discussed yesterday. Go and check that post out if you want more information. The Reserve Bank of Australia is expected to announce another increase on Tuesday in its bid to lower inflation, which is currently just over 5.1%, although, of course, that's the official number and way lower than reality. On the markets, the S&P ASX 200 index fell 0.43% to 6,563 on Friday, translating to a weekly loss of 0.6% and starting 2022-23 on an unsteady footing. Mayo Blast shares rallied 11.5% to 68 cents after sinking 69.4% over the previous 12 months. Zipco put on 9.1% to 48 cents on the heels of a 94.3% financial year loss, while its junior buy now, pay later target, Sezzle, jumped 19.2% to 31 cents. PointsBet Holdings climbed 7.47% to $2.88, after 77.5% of its value was wiped out. And biotech Imugene dropped 48.6% in 2021-22, and it added 8.3% to 20 cents on Friday, coinciding with the appointment of a clinical scientist and a positive phase 2 trial outcome, which was reported at the start of the week. Gold miner Regis Resources rose 7.7% to $1.40 after Andrew Forrest Wuilu investment vehicle attempted a raid on the register. On the other side of the ledger, material stocks suffered from a downturn in commodity prices. Diversified Miner Mineral Resources declined 4.1% to $46.28. Lithium Interest Liontown Resources 5.2% to $1. And Woodside Energy 4.4% to $30.45. BHP fell 2.9% to $40.05. And elsewhere, the crypto pain continues, with Bitcoin down 4.85% to 19,289, and Ether was down 3.05% to 1,061.32. And one victim was crypto hedge fund Three Arrows Capital, which filed for Chapter 15 bankruptcy, a move that protects its US assets while a liquidation is carried out in the British Virgin Islands. Representatives for Three Arrows filed the bankruptcy petition in New York on Friday, according to court papers. Chapter 15 bankruptcy filings stop creditors from seizing a company's assets in the US. A British Virgin Islands court ordered the liquidation of Three Arrows Capital earlier this week, and the fund, founded by former Credit Suisse traders Zhu Xu and Kyle Davies, managed an estimated $10 billion of assets as recently as March, according to blockchain analytics firm Nason. So, standing back, it's true to say that few investors will have experienced a tougher beginning of a year than the six-month stretch that just finished. Professional traders have been beaten down, while amateur traders that are used to 2021's eye-popping rallies were dealt a harrowing reality check. Traditional safe haven strategies used to protect the value of portfolios during volatile markets are performing as badly as higher risk equities as interest rates rise to curb inflation as economies slow. Shane Oliver, chief economist at AMP Capital, said normally bonds or fixed incomes are safer, less volatile asset classes than shares, which means conservative funds have a higher exposure to them than shares. But every so often, bonds have a rough ride at the same time as shares, usually when inflation is a major problem and central banks are raising interest rates, pushing up bond yields and resulting in negative returns from both fixed income, as bonds suffer a capital loss when bond yields rise, and shares. The result is that both conservative and balanced fund growth tend to have poor returns. And AMP's Oliver says the last time there were poor returns from conservative and balanced funds was during the bond crash of 1994, when inflation fears caused central banks, including the RBA, to aggressively raise rates following the early 1990s recession. This time around, inflation has been much higher, and it's been even more severe for bond rates that have increased from even lower levels. In fact, Australian bonds look to have had their worst 12 months since the 1930s. Predicting what will happen in the market over the next 6 months is, well, frankly, unusually difficult. The path forward remains treacherous, with the Fed pledging to move 1 month at a time. It's all about inflation right now, Marcus Skomer, chief economist at Pinebridge Investments, said. That's the only thing that matters, and how the Fed responds to it. Now, some believe that at this point, the bad news is mostly priced in. Skomer noted that the core personal consumption price index, an inflation measure that strips out volatile food and energy costs and is watched closely by the Fed, increased by 4.7% year on year in May. That's down from 4.9%. I think the picture is starting to come together, he said. Supply chain disruptions are easing everywhere. Commodity prices are not yet coming down, but they're not going up as fast either. All we need is oil to stay at $100 a barrel and inflation will come down. That, of course, is a big if, given the state of energy markets. Rising rents and housing prices, which are forms of stickier inflation, also need to be monitored. But Skomer thinks stock market sentiment is likely to improve in the second half of the year as investors realise that the situation isn't as bad as they previously thought, and they bet on the Fed successfully bringing down inflation without triggering a recession. I think we probably will have a stabilising market in the second half as we churn through this information, he said. And he predicts stock markets will finish the year above their current levels, but others remain sceptical that the worst is behind us. Strategists at Goldman Sachs told clients on Thursday that stocks could keep falling later this year, since equities are pricing in only a mild recession and more companies will likely begin reducing their earnings expectations. In the event of a recession, Goldman's team sees the S&P 500 dropping to 3,600 or 4.9% below Thursday's close. Others are calling even lower. What everyone agrees about is it's going to stay rocky for some time and iron stomachs will be necessary. The Fed's job remains difficult and there's a big risk it goes too far, lifting borrowing costs so high that it really hurts business activity or consumer spending and sends growth into reverse. Until the growth inflation mix improves, markets are likely to remain volatile as investors shift between inflation frustration and recession obsession, said Goldman's. But I would want to underscore that most stock valuations, particularly in the US, are still way above long-term sensible means. And unless those valuations can be supported by significant revenue growth, which I doubt, then the markets are definitely overpriced. So how far they fall and when they fall is, of course, the unknown quantity. But as I keep saying, in a bear market, you do get some rallies. Just don't be misled. Those rallies may be nothing more than a bear rally, which means that markets will drop further. And as I said earlier on, the trouble is, pretty much all asset classes are now wealth destroying. There is nowhere to hide. That's a problem. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.